Cold mornings, frosty windows. Yep, it's that time of year. So treat yourself and start your day with a cup of fresh roasted Sterling Roastery coffee, sourced from around the world and roasted multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. It's the kind of warm-up every sports fan deserves this holiday season. And right now, you can win one of three $50 Sterling gift cards, perfect for gifting or building your own winning lineup of Java in the morning. Enter today at sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways so you can wake up, warm up, and Sterling up this holiday season. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
125 defining moments, one legendary league. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and a great book is out right now, NFL Moments, 125 Icons and Stories That Define the NFL. It's a definitive visual history of the National Football League, packed with iconic images and untold stories behind the game's biggest plays and its greatest players. From the early legends like Red Grange to today's stars like Patrick Mahomes, this book is a touchdown for fans who crave more than just stories. So give your football bookshelf a Hall of Fame upgrade or snag a holiday gift for that NFL history buff on your shopping list. Pick up NFL Moments, available now at your favorite bookseller. We have breaking news from over 150 years ago in football history. The father of modern American football may have been a felon. Timothy B. Brown of Football Archaeology digs into this subject and tells us all the scoop. And Tim's coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another Tuesday where we get to visit with our friend Timothy P. Brown of FootballArchaeology.com. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Darren, how you doing? Hoping that this podcast provides a shot in the arm for you.
Yeah, real shot in the arm.
Or shoulder, one of the two.
Yeah, somebody's going to get pinched a little bit here, get a cap in them, but hopefully it won't be you or I, because we're just telling a story. We're just the messengers delivering the message.
That's right.
And the message we're delivering is something that you delivered recently on one of your tidbits on footballarchaeology.com. It was titled Walter Camp Arrested for Attempted Murder. The father of football, attempted murder. Tell us it's not true, Tim.
Bad guy. Yeah. Well, it turned out that, he wasn't a bad guy, but he was arrested. So, so old Walter, he had his eyes on a young lady back in like 84, 85, a young lady named Sally Barnes, who lived in New Jersey and was apparently a reasonably wealthy orphan. So, one way or another, Camp met her and ultimately proposed to her. And she turned him down. No reason stated in any of the articles, but she turned him down. So he went off and, he graduated from Yale, had ended his time, going to med school as well. And he was working in New York City, living there. And then he'd run back and forth to Yale and New Haven all the time, for Yale events, and his parents still lived there. So one day, in March of 87, a guy named George Day Condit Smith was found on a park bench after he was shot in the shoulder. And so the police came, there had been some kind of quasi witnesses, supposedly some guy had run away. But this Smith was not real talkative. He didn't really, he claimed that somebody came up to him, shot him. And somehow the thing came out that it had been like a jealous lover. So not Smith's lover, but that in the meantime, Smith had started courting that Sally Barnes, the woman that Camp had proposed to. So, one way or another, this detective got hot after suspected it was camp, and supposedly, he found the pistol and could trace it back to camp, and like how he did that overnight, I'm not sure.
The Tim, I'm a criminal justice major. That's what my degree's in. And back in school, that's what they taught you. And that's one of the first things you look at for solving a crime. The love triangle is one of the first things you do. And so this guy's spot on to the book so far.
Except that somehow he's tracing a pistol to camp that we find out later it wasn't true. So anyways, then like the following morning, he ends up encountering Camp at the business office for this clock company, and then comes back a little bit later and basically arrests him, takes him to the hospital where the Smith and the Smith is recuperating, and then this gets into the detective level or detective work of 1887, because he takes Camp and puts him in front of this guy and says, "Is this the guy who shot you?" No two-way mirror, kind of thing going on. And he says, "No, that's not the guy that shot me." So in the meantime, the press has gotten a hold of the fact that this star, and one of the head guys in the football world has been arrested for attempted murder. So it's going on all newspapers, and so some of them were even in the first article, they were retracting what was said earlier. But anyway, so and one of the other things that's funny about it is that when the Smith was shot, Camp had been in New Haven that evening, and he was at like a Yale festival where there were like 400 or 500 people there who saw him. So, he definitely wasn't the shooter. So then the whole thing kind of quieted down pretty quickly, and it's like it just seemed kind of a little goofy. And then a couple months later, then the newspapers come up with a thing about that Smith had shot himself, that he was trying to get sympathy from this Sally Barnes. And I guess maybe he thought the best way to do that is to shoot himself. So he shot himself in the shoulder and whatever.
So she didn't want any part of either one of these guys then, or Camp
No,
or
she
the
married it.
Smith.
She and Smith got married. Then like
Oh,
two, 3 months
but
later they get married.
that was a real shot on an arm for him, wasn't
Man, oh man.
it?
Maybe she was triggered by the shooting or something. But anyway, so they get married and they have two daughters. And then like in 1890, so 3 years into their marriage, she dies. I never figured out what she died from. And then like 4 years later, he remarries. 4 years later, he dies of tuberculosis. So now both of their daughters are orphaned, other than they're living with their stepmother, and turns out to maybe have tried to get their money and yada yada yada. So crazy things going on back then. Old Walter, on the other hand, had met somebody else and was married in 1888, and they remained married until he died in 1925. So he was that's kind of the story of Walter getting arrested for attempted murder, and he was out on the lam, or on the lam from then on.
Man, can you imagine that? First the young lady rejects Camp, and then not too much longer, he's arrested because of his knowing her, the relationship with her. That's just crazy. That's really kicking a guy while he's down, broken hearted and in cuffs or whatever they did
Yeah,
back
poor
then.
guy.
So
Well,
so
she must have been a Harvard fan.
yeah, must be or Columbia or somebody. But, wow, that is a story that you don't hear much about. You hear a lot about Walter Camp in history, but I think that's the first time I've ever heard that story is when I read your tidbit not too long ago, and that's pretty interesting. Did you get that like through the newspaper, just an article in the
Yeah,
paper?
it was just one of those like a lot of them. I'm searching for one thing and happen to notice a headline, next door in the newspaper, in the columns. And it's like, Walter Camp arrested for attempted murder. It's like, what?
It's got to be another Camp. It can't be the same guy.
Yeah.
But
And I think I've read one or two books on him, and I don't remember that being in there. I'm sure it was, but I, you know.
I've read like three books on him. I don't remember that ever being said. That'd be something you'd be pretty memorable. But hey, that's why you are the football archaeologist, and you find these little stories that some about famous people that nobody really knows about 160 years later. And that's what's great about the tidbits that you have on footballarchaeology.com. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about the tidbits and how people can find them.
Yeah, just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site slash newsletter, so you can subscribe, and then you'll get an email every time that I publish a tidbit. Otherwise, just visit whenever you want. Bookmark it. You can watch or read it on the Substack app, or follow me on Blue Sky because I post, every time that I release one, I post it on there too. So, whatever works for you.
All right, Tim. Well, we really appreciate the great story, the great research on this most famous person in football, maybe the most famous person in early football, anyway. And appreciate you coming on and sharing the story with us today.
Very good.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
You did not see their faces on the Wheaties boxes, nor did they have the headlines, but they were breaking barriers, one pitch at a time. The integration of minor league baseball, a history and player register, 1946 to 1959, by Rick Swain and Gary C. Fink, shines a light on the overlooked heroes who paved the way for future legends. From dusty bus rides to hostile crowds, these players fought for a place in a game that did not want to see them win. More than history, it's a tribute to courage, perseverance, and the power of a game to change. Honor their legacy today and grab a copy of The Integration of Minor League Baseball at your favorite bookseller.